Once upon a time, in fact, before there was time, there was nothing. Nothing at all except maybe potential, if you'll count that as a something. Before time, before space even, there in the darkness that no one existed to perceive as dark, the nothing exploded into a dot the size of a sub-microscopic particle in which all the energy the universe would ever hold was contained. Infinitely hot and infinitely dense, not created, never destroyed, it hung there in the nothing. The density of it all compelled the pull of outward forces, and the something burst into the size of a baseball in a minuscule moment so tiny we can never imagine it, and one further minuscule moment later the baseball was as big as a universe, and the stuff of everything that is already was. And from there it has never stopped expanding. From hot to cool, from density to spaciousness, from uniformity to infinite diversity, the energy that creates all things move outward in a process that most scientists say has no end. The universe has no boundary, no borders, no concluding chapter, but only a loop, like a snake swallowing its own tail, forever creating and forever created. And on our one lonely outpost of a minor galaxy in the middle of a cosmic nowhere, there spins our everywhere. Along with, not insignificantly, our everyone. All of the people we love and would die for and live with and struggle against. All that we treasure and fear losing, and most of what we can comprehend in our febrile efforts to understand is all here, in this singular little planet, upon which existence as we know it began, and through which we live and move and have our being. Carl Sagan says that this story, the grand theory with the somewhat silly name of the Big Bang, has about it the ring of an epic myth. So it does. It's epic enough that we cannot even begin to understand all its dimensions in one telling. Like all epic myths, it's the sort of story that benefits from multiple retellings, be they around the glowing light of a campfire or under the fluorescent illumination of a laboratory. It is too rich, too complex, and too dense a story for any Sunday sermon. The creation of the cosmos like a sacred text is not an idea to be tossed around without careful attention and generous humility. And here it is. For this moment, just one story, just one component piece of a series of conversations we've been having during this church year about creation and creation stories. If you haven't been here for any of the rest of them, I apologize for you coming in at the tail end. This is the last of our creation stories sermon series, and like all the stories we have discussed, it is so too big to talk about here. And yet we try. We set out at the beginning of this sermon series to examine different narratives of creation from all around the world, from all throughout history. We only scratched the surface of each story. And with each sermon, we could only examine just a few facets of the truth. But our goal was a big one, because most worthy goals are. We wanted to look at creation stories thoughtfully enough that we might mine from them some essential truths about what it is to be human, and in whose presence we are called to be reverential, worshipful, and awed. We have tried to look at those stories so they could tell us something about human nature, and such as it is, God's nature as well. These stories are the family histories of cultures, the snapshots into the spirituality of people across ages and places who, like us, were born with the great burden and gift of wonder. And here, at the end of our explorations, lies this story. The Big Bang, which most people would say is not a story at all, but a narrative series of facts, a statement of reality as the best and brightest among us have come to know it. I say it is both a fact and a story. And for my part, anyway, it's the story part I'm most concerned about. Human beings are storytelling creatures. It has long been the way that we make sense of the world. Our brains are fashioned to understand images, and no mathematical equation, not even E equals MC squared, has ever had as much power over the human imagination as the images conjured up following that simple phrase, "once upon a time." We are storytelling creatures. And as ever, I use the word story, not in the derogative sense employed by fact checkers, but as an accurate description of the way human beings describe their lives. Stories may or may not be factually true, but what they communicate about their tellers is at the core of their being. I am not, as you might have noticed, a theoretical physicist. Chances are not good that I am ever going to understand string theory. Truly, not good. Someone may in fact try to stand up and polylog and give a 30-second proof of the existence of wiggling little strands of energy that lie inside all some atomic particles and seemingly dance energy into matter, but I can tell you I'm still not going to get it. Instead, and on account of the frailty of my intellectual powers, I choose to have great faith in the great scientists of our day, and to accept the prevailing wisdom of quantum mechanics as a fact, I trust them. It's okay that I don't totally get it. In fact, the first UU service I ever went to, I waltzed into the front door a terrified teenager, and the person preaching the sermon was a PhD astrophysicist who was telling me something about quantum mechanics that I didn't understand, and I ran out crying, think I was too stupid to be a UU. It's okay to not get it. The story of the origins of the universe and the building blocks of life has been sufficiently proven by other people that I don't feel compelled to reprove it myself. After all, there is plenty of work left to do. And most of the physicists out there are a little too busy counting galaxies and gazing at wobbling stars to do it. The work that is left once all the facts are proven is much the same as the work we've been doing with other creation narratives this church year. Physicists tell us the facts. It takes theology to determine their meaning for human existence. That's right, theology, which is at its core storytelling. Physicists need theologians, and theologians need physicists. They give us the facts. We weave them into a story. See, even if we take it on faith that this narrative of creation is true, which I, for one, do, we still have before us the exact same task that people across all the ages have had in the presence of their respective creation myths. We have to find meaning in it. We have to ask how the story affects us. If we are shaped by it, we must ensure that such shaping is in the direction of our highest ideals and not the other way around. We have a narrative before us. A story, if you will indulge my love of that word. As with every other creation myth, the central theological question regarding the Big Bang is this: how will we use this tale? And will we tell it in a way that gives life rather than takes it away? If this is our origin story, what does it compel us to do? And how does it call us to be in relationship to all things? There are several things I think this Big Bang narrative has to teach us, or maybe three positive interpretations I'd like to lift up in regard to this creation story. They are the humbling reality of our smallness, our utter dependence upon things larger than us, and the great dance we must do as we move between the far reaches of our human capacity to understand and the vastness of the mystery which we cannot comprehend. Humility is a lesson that that most ideological traditions, religious and otherwise, could do well to talk about more often. A couple of weeks ago, we spoke of the narrative that's present in many creation stories that says that human beings are to have dominion over all the earth. Even the evolutionary story can be twisted to tell that tale. We also yearned for a new narrative, adopted broadly across the religious spectrum, which says that we are not in fact the center of the universe, nor even the center of this planet, but part and parcel of something bigger, something we're called to protect, not to use and abandon. Cosmology takes that humble reminder of our relatively minuscule place in the family of things and explodes it to a power beyond all imagining. Bear with me here. There are something like 10 million, 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 million particles in the region of the universe that we can observe. I will not repeat that number because it makes my head hurt. But I can say that those particles are coalesced into something like 100 billion galaxies, each containing hundreds of stars, which in turn, like our sun, could each support any number of planets, which, by the way, are so tiny in comparison to open space that they are impossible to directly see through any means, including the Hubble Space Telescope. So tiny. We are not the center of the universe. And if the claim that space and time really have no end is to be taken as fact, we are not anything close to its culmination. Indeed, we are a glimmer, a speck, a tiny bit of an enormous story, and the place we hold on this fragile planet is not as kings and queens to rule, but as subjects of a vast system which holds us all in the palm of its massive star-bedecked hand. And thus our entitlement, our sense of our own grandiosity, is paired in this story with the necessary corrective of our radical dependence, the truth that we are neither self-contained nor self-reliant, but creatures knit together out of star stuff for this brief time, creatures whose very existence is entirely dependent on the massive system of which we are a minuscule, if hopeful, part. The universe does not need us. We need it, and our little corner of it. And even if we use what little power we have for self-preservation, such an act acts that we preserve the working system in order to protect ourselves. In our homes, our families, our churches, our towns, our nations, the whole global mess that we're a part of, we are reminded by this story that we are not islands unto ourselves, but dependent creatures in need of and accountable to both one another and the forces that created us. Moral action can be shaped by this humility, by this radical dependence, if only we are guided by this grand story to admit how very much we are in need of one another. Now, some would rightly say that the story of the Big Bang and the history of modern physics in general is not a story of human insignificance at all, but a tale of human triumph, an expression of our immense power to understand. It is a triumph, and we are amazing creatures, are we not? But behind all of our knowing, there yet lurks a vast unknowing. For my part, I rather like it that way. Like physicists, we dance always between the vastness of what we are personally capable of and the limits that our dependence on the universe and its laws place upon us. That doesn't mean that some brave ones among us don't always seek the answers to the biggest questions. Speaking of the quest for a unified theory of everything, in which physicists could really get behind all of the big questions, Stephen Hawking says, "If we do discover a complete theory, it should in time be understandable in broad principle by everyone, not just a few scientists. Then we shall all, philosophers, scientists, and just ordinary people, be able to take part in the discussion of the question of why it is we in the universe exist. If we find the answer to that, it would be the ultimate triumph of human reason, for then we would know the mind of God. I've always felt cranky about the idea of knowing the mind of God. Cranky, in fact, about the whole concept of people finding a unified theory of everything. I'm just fine with mystery. Mine is not a mind that explores the nooks and crannies of the scientific wonders of our age. I rather think, had I been under that apple tree instead of Isaac Newton when that fateful fruit fell on his head, I probably would have just rubbed my noggin and asked some deep philosophical questions about how the experience of pain shapes us as moral creatures and whether the apple could be somehow construed as a metaphor for God. Not a lesser question, but a different one than that which led to the discovery of gravity. I assume that there are wonders beyond the human imagination, that we will never know all there is to know, and that every time we crack the code, another layer yet undecoded rests tantalizingly behind the text we read. The mind of God, to me, remains blessedly unknown. And the reverence I experience for that which I call God is not an inherently rational emotion. But the story of the Big Bang leaves room for both reason and reverence. Room for both Stephen Hawking and for me. For those who tackle the mystery through the power of the intellect and those who rest just on the forming edge of faith, content with not knowing it all. In the beginning, there was nothing. And how big is nothing anyway? And what brought the something up from the nothing? And is there a plan to any of it, or just a continuing cycle of energy, neither created nor destroyed, neither good nor evil, but present within each and everything? These are the questions. Physicists try to answer them, and while I'm glad they do, I mostly live with them. Approach the mystery how you will. Pin it down and seek to understand. Explore the reaches of your own magnificent mind. Or stare up as I do at the stars in gape-mouthed wonder. Either way, we stand before the mystery. We are held by it. We are connected to it. Either way, the story opens up before us, inviting us to live out our interconnection to the universe in new and more difficult and more enriching ways. To look back on the stories we've talked about in this sermon series, maybe we were never formed by clay out of God's own hands. Perhaps Shiva did not dance us out of nothingness, and the ancient gods did not make war upon one another, birthing us out of their pain and their yearning for a new beginning. Perhaps the first creatures didn't drag the dust of our being up from the primordial ocean, or perhaps all of those stories, every narrative ever told across the ages, is just another way of describing the vastness of the mystery. And as such, every single story is true. What will we do with the story of cosmic origin and ceaseless expansion, with the truth of our insignificance and our magnificence? It is a story of awe, of wonder, of humility, and of power. It will shape our future for generations to come. And it is, after all, up to us to tell the tale.